This is CliffCentral.com. Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
Presenting the Attorney's Fidelity Fund and the Attorney's Insurance Indemnity Fund on CliffCentral.com, your champions in the legal profession.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Today is a further feature in our series on the Attorney's Insurance Indemnity Fund, which we refer to as the AIIF. And with us in studio once again is Thomas Harbin. He's an admitted attorney and the general manager of the AIIF. Welcome to you, Thomas.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's great to be back.
Yeah, quickly, our Facebook page is The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Have a look at it. Give us a like if you can. And our Twitter handle is at HertzLaw. Once again, we present the show in collaboration with our partner, Legal Talk South Africa, who now have the staggering amount of 142,000 members on their Facebook page. Must be one of the biggest today. Thomas, you've had a very busy year. Quickly, just before I ask you where you've been and what you did and where you were last week, I know I was trying to get hold of you. The Attorney's Insurance Indemnity Fund is what we call a short-term insurance company, really, which is there in case someone suffers a loss as a result of the negligence of their own attorney, and then they can get paid from the fund under certain circumstances.
That is correct, Harry.
Okay, where were you last week?
Last week was a rather interesting week. It culminated in a trip down to KZN, where we are dealing with a matter which is rather unfortunate, arising out of a Ponzi scheme run by a practitioner who subsequently committed suicide. This happened about 7 years ago. And in this year, we've seen more than one suicide that is by a practitioner, and post the practitioner's death, unfortunately, certain activities come to the fore, which really lead to claims, potential claims against the AIIF as well as the Fidelity Fund.
That very attorney, I mean, this has been all over the press. It's all over. The attorney committed suicide. It's a rather large firm. We don't want to mention the name and embarrass them. But there are many partners. The question to you is, when one attorney in a big firm, or any firm for that matter, commits a crime, is the partnership liable for the losses, or is it only that attorney himself?
In a partnership, all the partners are liable for the contractual debts of the firm.
Yes.
So if you and I are in partnership, and Lionel was a partner with us, and I, for example, would to misappropriate clients' monies or to breach mandates in any way, yourself and Lionel then would still be joint and severally liable with me. There would one huge change coming in that respect with the Legal Practice Act, because the Legal Practice Act specifically lists liability for theft as well, which is a specification which was not in the Attorneys Act.
Okay. The amount of cover, in this particular case in KZN, the amount of the losses, we're talking tens of millions. But the amount that the fund covers is limited to a certain amount only.
Yes.
Very basically, what is the limit? How does the limit work that you cover?
Our limit is based on the number of partners or directors in the firm on the day that the cause of action arose. It starts with 1,562,500, 1,562,500. for single practitioners, it's sliding scale. For larger firms of 14 partners or more, it's 3,125,000 rands.
If an attorney then prescribes his client's claim because he didn't lodge it in time, the client would have had a claim, say, of 30 million because he lost both his legs and one arm, for instance. The amount that you would cover would only be about a million or million and a half, whatever it may be. The rest is covered by what, or isn't it?
For the balance of the claim, if the attorney has what we call top-up cover, that's cover that attorneys purchase in addition to it's a layer that sits above this free cover with the AIIF, the top-up cover would step in. Unfortunately, in the event that the attorney either does not have to have top-up cover or has insufficient top-up cover, he will be on his own for the balance of the claim.
There must be some young new practitioners just starting out that can't afford the top-up cover. They are therefore liable for the amount over and above which you cover. In their personal right, they could lose their house, really, if they were negligent.
Is correct, and in the South African context, really top-up cover is cheaper than you'd get in other jurisdictions, because the bulk of claims are dealt with by the AIIF. In fact, it's about 98% of claims that are dealt with by the AIIF, and that makes top-up relatively cheaper in South Africa.
The value of claims I read notified to the AIIF was in March this year 475 million. That's a hell of a lot of money that people have claimed against the fund as a result of negligence by attorneys. Has there been an increase, or is that the figure this at the end of the year? What would you say?
By the end of December, when an actuarial assessment is done again, we expect that figure will increase. And this figure is really relates to the actual act of open claims on our side. Mm. So it will be noteworthy that for a company as small as the AIIF, this is a really significant debt. And unfortunately, most of the claims making up that 475 million rands arise out of behavior which practitioners could have corrected. And these claims could have been avoided had practitioners implemented even the most basic risk management measures in firms. Anybody can make a bona fide mistake, but the reality is that a lot of claims arise out of conduct which can only be regarded as reckless in certain circumstances. And also practitioners embarking and taking up work that's really outside of their scope. You remember that we only cover claims arising out of the conduct of the profession, but unfortunately, practitioners have gone and embarked on other areas. We've seen people conducting investment advice and getting involved in Ponzi schemes and the like, trying to double clients' monies and advising clients where they could put their monies. And you have attorneys now doubling as estate agents and even auctioneers, and that's really outside of the scope of the profession. To put it simply, attorneys should stick to their knitting.
Well, you know, things are tough all over, and there are a lot of attorneys that are not making it. I think that's a fact. The big firms are doing very well. They've got all the big buildings. But there are a lot of single man and small practices that are really struggling at the moment. Yes. And I know that lawyers are doing matters that are outside the scope of their expertise, as you know, and they get themselves into trouble doing this because they don't know what they're doing very often, and they're negligent. And they may prescribe claims, they may give the wrong advice, they may not lodge the whatever it may be. And those are the claims that you are often seeing, that you're picking up. The question to you, Thomas, is the practice of law, and you've been a lawyer, you've been there, and I'm a lawyer, so we know it's by its nature extremely stressful. We most of the time we're chasing deadlines and we run around like blue-ass flies, if they use that term, and this causes problems. Have you picked that up? Is that very often the case?
Yes, that is the case, Gary. If you in assessing a claim and having a discussion with the practitioners, is concerned, you'll sometimes find that when the mistake was made or the circumstances that led to the claim occurred, that the practitioner could have been stressed and or could have been dealing with other aspects. You know, we are all humans. We've got problems both inside the profession and outside. So the attorney may have well been distracted by some other issues that were happening in their lives outside of the conduct of
like
the profession.
Like anyone else, yeah, lawyers have debt problems and they go through divorces, and you see that, and that's when he's losing his focus, really, and then he makes a mistake and a claim gets lodged against the attorney and lands up with you.
Yes.
That's what you're seeing, I guess.
Yes, we do, and we have quite a bit of interaction with professional indemnity insurers around the world, and I'm not aware of a study that has been done on stresses in the legal profession in South Africa, but I know in the UK and in Australia such studies have been done, and one of the professional indemnity insurers in Australia has pointed out to us that the vast majority of cases arise in circumstances where the attorney was dealing with issues outside of his professional life, and that's where they dropped the ball or just took their eye off the matter for a while.
As attorneys, we talk of these deadlines. We've got to file a plea by a certain day. Everything has got a time limit to it. You've got to be in court. You've got to be there at a specific time. It can happen that you make a mistake, you diarize it for the wrong date, and you don't arrive at court. The next thing is a judgment granted against your client, and that gives rise to a claim for damages against you as an attorney. And this is so easily, I mean, as an attorney, I sit here and say, but thanks to God, I could be in that position. It can happen to anyone. Even some of the top attorneys, I guess, often have to face these claims of having made mistakes.
Yes, that is correct, Gary. Anybody, you know,
no one's immune.
Yes, no one is immune to these things. But an attorney facing a professional indemnity claim or even an inquiry at the law society, would add to their stresses. You know, and sometimes it's how people deal with these things is really important. An expression that had a different meaning for me after I came to work at the AWIF is estate planning. I've seen people faced with claims and then try and reorganize their estates in order to try and to mitigate against the consequences of a judgment that they would face. So, you know, to put it simply, people need to take into account that these things affect you, and they affect your all aspects of your life.
We've also noticed a very large increase in the amount of claims against doctors for medical negligence. There's a suggestion that the attorneys are losing the road accident fund work, or about to, and they're looking for new avenues, so they're chasing doctors. Is that happening against lawyers? Are people looking for lawyer mistakes to try and nail the lawyers and then land up at your door trying to get cover from you?
Yes, that is. We've seen an increasing number of firms who are now, if I could put it in inverted commas, specializing in
suing other lawyers.
Yes.
Yes. Unheard of, Thomas, some years ago. Lawyers had a brotherhood. They kind of protected one another. Now it's a free-for-all.
Yes,
so lawyers are trying to nail one another because they know that people like you are insuring these claims.
Yes, and unfortunately, some of the claims that are being pursued have no real legal basis, and we are investigating those instances where we suspect that there's collusion. For example, if a claim prescribes in my hands, I'd walk across to your office, Gary, because you're my friend, and I'd say, please issue summons against me or send it so that I purportedly acting on behalf of the client, and I'll report it to the AWIF, and we'll try and get money way. But yeah, we investigate all matters. We investigate them thoroughly, and because of the depth to which we track claims, we are picking up those where there's possible collusion between attorneys.
There are attorneys that don't pay their suppliers timely, like any other profession or any other business. And one psychologist is reported to have been owed, and I kind of heard this firsthand, a psychologist did quite a lot of work for a road accident fund attorney in medico-legal reports, and she wasn't paid for it. Is there any insurance covering someone who is claiming from an attorney for unpaid anything? That your fund wouldn't cover this. It only covers negligence.
Yes, that's correct, Gary. This would be a trading debt, and trading debts we wouldn't cover in the same way that we wouldn't cover an attorney who hadn't paid their rental and would be sued by a landlord. But there are a number of instances where medical legal experts haven't been paid by attorneys and they claim. Mm. And attorneys really need to look at this, because that in itself can lead to professional indemnity claims against them, in the sense that, to use your example, the psychologist may have been instructed in a number of matters to prepare medical legal reports. Because she hasn't been paid in one or more of those matters, she may then refuse to compile reports in the other outstanding matters.
Mm.
The attorney is then unable to properly quantify the claim, which regards in either a prescription or an undersettlement, because the matter has not been properly assessed and quantified. So practitioners really need to think about how they conduct even that aspect of their
process. On this very note, Thomas, what happens if an attorney has used an expert in a trial or in a case that he's doing? It could be a psychologist, could be a handwriting expert, whatever it may be, and he doesn't pay them. Do they have rights to report him to the Law Society, or has that got nothing to do with the Law Society? How do they get paid?
I think they'll have to institute action against the attorney, and the attorney will have to then deal with it on their own. But insofar as it may amount to unprofessional conduct, certainly that conduct needs to be reported to the Law Society.
So you can report it to the Law Society?
Yes.
Okay. We have a few questions coming in from our Legal Talk members. Let's take this one. It comes from a guy called Jeff. He says, "Hi guys, I instructed an attorney to draw up my antenuptial contract." He actually put, the posting was, "I instructed my attorney to draw up my ANC," and someone replied, "Is this a political thing?" But anyway, an ANC stands for an antenuptial contract, as we all know. "Later, when we bought a property, we were informed by the bank that our ANC contract was never registered by the deeds office." Seriously serious, isn't it?
That is, and unfortunately, we've had a few claims on our side that arise out of similar circumstances, and where the attorneys have reported the matters to us, we've had to deal with that because it's a situation that has huge
implications.
Yes, for not only for the married couple, but also in respect of their creditors.
Yeah, someone replied, Anin Labiskachny, she's the group moderator of Legal Talk, or one of them. She said, "If a lawyer is at fault, I would throw the responsibility back to the lawyer to fix at his own cost. Go back to the lawyer and discuss the situation with him. This is a very costly oversight on the lawyer's part." It really, really is. By not registering the antenuptial contract. The way it works is, before you get married, you're all excited. You sign the antenuptial contract before a notary, which is usually the lawyer. And then he, for some reason, omits or forgets or is neglectful in registering the darn thing at the deeds office. And there is no contract in place. You don't have an ANC. That's as simple as that.
And especially in this festive season where people will be getting married, please make sure that your ANC is registered before you get married. It doesn't help to get married tomorrow, but your ANC is only registered on Friday, a day or two after after the wedding.
I just want to clear this up with you. Are you saying, I may not agree with you, I think as long as you sign before you get married, I don't know if it needs to be registered before you get married. I bow to you, you may be right, but as long as you've signed and the registration can take place afterwards, am I wrong or right? I think I'm right. I think you have a different view.
Yes, I have a different view. I think, yes.
It's got to be registered before?
Yes, I think it has to be. I think it has to be lodged and registered before. But
okay, maybe
we'll
check wrong.
It out.
We'll have a bet on this. And,
okay.
Well, not a bet, I'll buy you a drink, whatever it may be.
Yes.
Thomas, do you know what happens, just while we're on the subject, if it's not registered, you are married in community of property, although in your own mind you believe you're married by antenuptial contract. Can you apply when you find out that it's not registered? Can you apply to court? What can you do?
Yes, in those circumstances, the parties can bring an application to the High Court. It's potentially a very costly matter. Notice would need to be given to creditors, and the parties will need to show sufficient cause to convince the court to change the marital regime.
So the court would then stamp it and say, I convert you from incommunity to antenuptial.
Yes,
I think you've got to give notice to all your creditors.
That's correct.
The whole world's got to know this, because you can't just change your marital regime. Someone mentioned a very good idea. They said just get divorced and then remarry again and avoid applying to court, which is probably the cheaper way. But then you know the consequences of that one.
Yes.
There's another one that came in from Neil. He's had a bad experience with our profession, unfortunately. He says, I gave a power of attorney and instructed an attorney to lodge a claim for damages from another attorney who had prescribed my claim. So the first attorney prescribed his claim. He got a second attorney to sue the first attorney, and the second attorney did nothing. So he lost the claim as well.
Even that we've seen in our work at Gary. A claim against an attorney, as with a claim against anyone else, needs you need to bring it within 3 years.
Yeah.
It prescribes after 3 years. We've seen instances similar to those where a client instructs a second attorney, and the second attorney does not bring the claim within 3 years. In one instance, the new attorney sent a letter of demand and was under the impression that the letter of demand on its own will interrupt prescription.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. The attorney needs to issue summons.
Yeah, you've got the summons interrupts prescription.
Yes.
You've got to have issued that summons to stop the prescription to interrupt it. Yeah.
Yes.
So in this particular case, both attorneys have been negligent. You could face two claims here. I don't know if you pay out on both, because it's
we'll pay out on one. And in this case, it would be rather complicated. We'll have to start at the beginning to see whether the underlying action that the first attorney was instructed to bring was sustainable, and then we'll have to check that whether the client suffered a loss as a result of the first attorney's negligence, and then we'll go to investigate the liability of the second attorney. So.
Okay, the attorneys, your fund, really, if someone's got a claim, they don't knock on your door. They should go to a second attorney.
Yes.
And the second attorney then puts in a claim. He writes to the first attorney and says, hey, you'd be negligent, you've botched this claim, whatever it may be, and I'm claiming from you. And that attorney then comes and knocks on your door and says, hey, cover me, please, up to a certain amount, whatever the amount may be.
Yes, that is correct. And if I could just add something, arising out of the issue of prescription. It's important for members of the public to obtain regular reports from their attorneys regarding what's happening in their matters. And I understand that your relationship with your attorney is based on trust, and your attorney is an expert. And the vast majority of attorneys in the country are honest, and they do very good work for their clients, and they do it honestly. Unfortunately, there are those who do not. The facts in this matter remind me of a matter that we dealt with in Cape Town, where an attorney told a client, lied about court dates, lied about court orders having been received, and he was sued. And when the matter was reported to us, he had his file, he had file notes, everything looked like it had been done perfectly in the matter. Until
you asked for a case number or something.
A few days before the matter went to trial, he went to church, and after speaking to his priest, he had a road to Damascus experience, and he phoned the legal advisor who was dealing with the matter at the time, and confessed that everything he had in his file, including his file notes, was false, and it was created at the time that he was facing the action. But
you pay out on that, don't you?
Yes, unfortunately, because he was liable. And
you've got a right of recourse called the law of subrogation. You've got a right of recourse against the attorney that you pay out against.
Yes, either the attorney, well, in most cases, if it arises out of negligence, we won't. But if there's a third party, for example, who has received funds, we'll proceed against them. An easy example is arising out of a conveyancing transaction where the attorney makes payment to a seller of property prematurely. To the seller of property prematurely,
so
then we'll proceed against
it. You would claim against the third party, not against the attorney himself.
Yes, we'd step into the shoes of the attorney and claim against the third party.
Good. That's the voice of Thomas Harbin. He's the general manager of the Attorney's Insurance Indemnity Fund. Always love having you in studio. What are you doing for Christmas?
Well, I will be leaving it in just over a week to go. I'll be going home to visit family in the Eastern Cape as well as KZN.
Good. Have a wonderful Christmas, and thank you for your support, and thank you for being a guest on our show.
Thank
and
you
enjoy
very much
your drive.
Thanks, and you a very good, pleasant Christmas to you and your listeners as well.
Thank you, Thomas. This is a beautiful version, Thomas, you may not have heard it, of Driving Home for Christmas. And it's by Glenys Grace. She's a singer from Holland. It's an old Chris Rea song. It's beautiful. Listen to this. Those people driving home for Christmas. Yeah.
I remember the Chris Rea version.
We're going to...
This is CliffCentral.com.